Episodes in accordance for the wheelchair audience. You don't want to miss any audio clips, cause we're providing information, tips and some tricks for every state and every nation. Someone can benefit, like, what's the best fabric? Should I get the tiger's yellow carbon fiber palette?
Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Wheelchair Nerds. It's funny. I was just on a meeting this morning, folks, and I was telling people that I already feel like it's 2025, but it is actually still August. And back in my younger days, I would have been saying not to rush summer away. So technically, it is still the end of August as we're recording this. This will come out sometime in the next week or so. And earlier in the summer and last year during the summer, we focused on travel. We focused on getting folks out there. If you guys may recall listening to going on vacation, taking a cruise, all that kind of good stuff. And then this past summer, just a few weeks ago, we did an episode with our friends down in San Antonio, Texas at Morgan's Wonderland. And we talked about accessibility related to theme parks. So as I looked at the calendar year, I kind of started really to focus on it. What typically happens in fall? Well, as most of you guys have figured out based on my accent, when you listen to me, I am not from quite deep in the South, but I am from Southern Virginia. And when I grew up in Southern Virginia, the leaves would start to change and start to get a little bit chilly, that's when people started thinking about getting outdoors, because the leaves in Virginia along Shenandoah, oh, they're gorgeous. And with that said, I also had a lot of folks that hunted, a lot of folks that camped. Friends of mine, my nephew hunts, and you know, we just wanted to really focus on what are some really cool getting outdoors sort of vibe. So I stumbled upon, I think it was late last year, early this year, a podcast done by two gentlemen that actually have as guests today, Greg and Mike. And they do a podcast dedicated to accessible hunting, but there's also much more that they have on there. So gentlemen, before we get to dive too deep into the questions of this podcast, kind of talk about where we're going to go with it. Greg, why don't you introduce yourself? Give us a little background. Tell me why you're a wheelchair nerd, all that good stuff.
Sure, Angie. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having us on your podcast and everything you do for our community. You know, we need strong advocates that tell it like it is. And it's very, very nice to have us on your podcast today. As you said, my name is Greg Trainer, and I'm 56. I've been quadriplegic since the time I was 31. I had a diving accident in 1999, and I'm a C4-5 complete quadriplegic. I live in the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. And before my injury, I was an avid outdoorsman, avid bow hunter, and I didn't think I could ever do that again. But I did my rehabilitation down your way in Shepherd Center.
Oh, yeah.
And I got a really good exposure to what was possible right away. And I just want to give a shout out to their therapeutic rec department, because yes, they literally saved my life, not only medically, but in my attitude. And I'm just happy to be here. I love the outdoors, and I'm fortunate enough to call Mike Hudson my friend, and he and I have collaborated for a long time on getting people back into the outdoors.
I love it. And as a recreation therapist, I need to go on record and say I did not pay Greg to say that, but most of our listeners do know by undergraduate background, I am a recreation therapist. So I love it. I love hearing about all the cool therapeutic rec programs that are out there. And the Shepherd Center has a phenomenal one for sure. So Mike Hudson, who are you?
Well, you know, I hate to jump in right after Greg, because he just stole all my tags. You know, I'm a quadriplegic as well. I got hurt a little bit earlier than Greg. I got hurt in 1995. From a diving accident. I'm a C6-7 quadriplegic. I too went to Shepherd. Same thing. Therapeutic rec was my outlet. They told me I had to go on so many outings. We figured out real quick that I loved every one of the outings was camping or fishing or something. And they said you had to do four. Well, I ended up doing like 24. They were trying to kick me off the bus. But thank you again for having us on. Advocacy is really where it's at. And Greg and I are just blessed to have met each other years ago. And we collaborate, and pretty much our little podcast is just about allowing people to see that life goes on after a traumatic injury.
Absolutely. And one of the things Greg and I had a chance to chit-chat a little bit before this podcast, too, is that if you're listening to this and you're like, man, I've got a congenital diagnosis, or I work in pediatrics, I'm an OT or a PT who works in pediatrics. And, you know, what are these gentlemen who 30 plus years, spinal cord injury only, what are they going to bring to the table? One of my goals, Mike, and I discussed with Greg, is that I want to inspire people who never had that opportunity to go into the great outdoors to explore it. This is not just for folks, y'all. This is not an episode that we're just focusing on spinal cord injuries whatsoever. We are encompassing everything. It's all about the equipment and all about what's accessible. So,
you know, that's one of the biggest kickers is, you know, I tell people I can't do anything to change your injury, but we can get you out of your head and out of your home, and we can change your mindset a little bit. And that's pretty much what it's all about. You know, it, again, it's not about spinal cord injury. It's injuries themselves. And so we're all broken in some way. We just want to get back out and have a good time.
Very true. Very true. So when we think about wheelchairs, because this is a podcast for wheelchair nerds, we know that I'm a wheelchair nerd, and how I define wheelchair nerd when we first were coming up with this podcast idea is that when therapists don't receive a ton of education when it comes to wheelchairs, but the ones that do absolutely become nerdy about it. And then my friends who use wheelchairs, and Greg, we talked about this a little bit, and Mike, I think you'd agree, is that y'all become very nerdy about every little nuanced piece of equipment that either is added or taken away from whatever seating system or wheelchair base is appropriate for you.
Absolutely. You know, having the proper, you know, seating clinic, having the opportunity to try equipment is just essential. I know for me, being a quadriplegic, if something is even 2 inches out of place, you know, it's either I can use it and it works out fantastic, or it's inaccessible because it's 2 inches to the left. You know, there's only so much movement that I have, and having the proper seating clinic and the right therapy makes all the difference in the world to me.
Man, you hit the nail on the head. I'm 29 years into this, and I just got into a new chair the last 2 weeks. And I'm hating it. The chair is great, but I am so used to 6 years in the other chair. Man, it's like having your shoes on the wrong feet, you know? So I'm trying to make my posture better. My body doesn't like that. It said, no, I like the old way.
It's funny. Y'all talk about, y'all both mentioned the Shepherd Center. A good friend of mine that's been down there for a number of years. I don't believe she was there when y'all were there. Physical therapist named Robin Skolsky. Good friend of mine. So Robin got nicknamed by the local providers down there as being the quarter inch queen, because they would get so annoyed because Robin would be like, nope, that needs to be just right for this person. And she will tell you that she wears that badge proudly. She says, call me the quarter inch queen all day long if you want to. I don't care. It's got to be exactly the way my patients need it.
Somebody that really understands the injury and how much of a difference a quarter inch can make. You know, it either works for you or it doesn't. And sometimes that's the difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, you guys are 30 years post. Talking about wheelchair clinics and whatnot, if you could go back and tell newly injured Mike, we'll start with you, Mike, when you first were getting your very first wheelchair, what are some things that you'd like to go back and tell the younger version of you that you wish you would have spoken up and said about during the evaluation process?
Well, you know, I'm going to be honest. When I first got hurt, it was a prideful thing. Mm-hmm. Even as a quad, I was a C8 function level. So I spent the first 6 years in a manual chair, and I did well in school. The PTs and OTs that helped frame me out in the chair, they thought it would be great to put me in a pink wheelchair. And I'm okay with that. My manhood is okay in pink. I look good in pink. So for the first 6 years, I either rode a pink or a purple wheelchair.
Love it.
But the getting back to the nerdy side of it, I saw that as less debilitating. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up swallowing my pride 6 years later and gotten a power chair. Game changer. Because as even though I was pretty strong, I was still not as independent as I could have been. So I wished I'd have went to a power chair right away. The biggest thing is mine is always seat height, because I've had a couple chairs that would be just a little bit too tall and I'd drop my phone. As a quad, I can still reach down and get it. Now I'm too fat and lazy, and so I have to use a reacher to try to get to them. So that's the biggest kicker, is I wished I'd have taken more time to swallow some pride and understand it's not about that. It's truly about independence.
What about you, Greg? What would you tell younger you?
Well, it was kind of fortunate that after my injury, I decided to go back to school for my master's. And I live 20 minutes from the University of Pittsburgh. So as I was going for my master's in rehab counseling and assistive tech, I was working and going to school with the people who ran the seating center, CAT, you know, Center for Assistive Tech.
Pretty amazing place. Shout out to Mark Schmaler, Rachel Richin, all those guys there. Y'all are awesome. Sorry for whoever I missed.
Exactly, Angie. I mean, I had the opportunity to speak with world-class individuals that knew what they were doing and kind of took me under their wing. And I was actually spoiled with Power Wheelchairs because they knew what to do. They said, if it's not right, we'll fix it. We'll make it a different way. And I've had a really good relationship with CAT over the years. And I've only used Permobil power chairs. I haven't, you know, switched around to a lot of chairs, but I've had a really good experience. So I'm a little bit not the norm, you know, living in Pittsburgh and also going to school with those folks, having classes with them. They mentored me and kind of took me under their wing. So I've had really good experience with my power chairs.
That's awesome. You know, Mike, your story that you mentioned about going into a power chair earlier, working in pediatrics, I saw that a lot too. And I can specifically, I'm obviously not going to name names because, you know, the world of CRT is very small. But I think back specifically to a physician that I worked with, and this physician was adamant if there was any sort of chance that someone who was newly injured could move the wheels on an ultralight wheelchair, she wanted them to do it. She was, you know, get the projection rims, get all these things. And I remember it wasn't that I was opposed to that. Now remember, I have a rec therapy brain, right? So I wasn't opposed to that at all because I feel like people should build on the skills they have. We know nowadays, when it comes to a spinal cord injury, a lot of times people were, you know, not sure how long people could continue to progress with therapy. It happens for years, especially incomplete injuries. So that acute injury, I mean, you can definitely still build up some strength and some skills and have more things come back over time. So not, I wasn't opposed to it, but the thing that really got me was I can picture this one young man just absolutely struggling to move an ultralight wheelchair. And I'm just like, and we took him on a community outing. And it's just like, you look at him and you're like, dang, if he had a power chair, he would be able to stay up with his peers. And on a community outing, that's really what we were hoping for. So that's something that I can definitely recall as being working in a pediatric hospital, something I saw a lot. And I get it. I do. But at the same time, you know, very early on, I had someone say to me who used a wheelchair and ultralight wheelchair and said, hey, you know what? She's like, this is not a piece of exercise equipment. If I need to exercise, I do other things. There, you know, I have to make a point to do that. And it definitely stuck with me because I thought, you know, same thing. You know, I still have to choose to go on walks. I still have to choose to do a treadmill. My just average every day getting around, that doesn't count as exercise.
So, right. And it was like Greg, I went straight to college, and you know, and here I am a new quad trying to figure out because in 95 they didn't have push button doors everywhere. So I'm trying to open doors, books on my lap, getting to school, 23 years old. So I'm trying to still talk to the ladies and all that. The problem with it is I was not independent. Mm-hmm. I could push well, but you get off in the grass, that's a game changer, you know, mm-hmm. And now you're stuck and you look like a goofball over there. If I would have just swallowed my pride and got in a power chair, could have probably got out of some of those issues. Plus, not to mention, you know, 29 years in now, my shoulders don't feel so hot with trying to do that as a quad, and it really starts anchoring on your transfers with longevity. Mm-hmm. So it's about getting the right people in place and giving you solid intel. You know, there's a thing out there, you can have too much pride, end up getting yourself in trouble. And mm-hmm. So just listen to the people that have been doing it a long time.
Absolutely. Now on the flip side of that, so I had you guys reflect on your younger selves. What do you wish? And I know, Greg, you were definitely spoiled by the folks that you have at Pitt. But what do you wish, Greg, clinicians and providers? So folks who sometimes they were historically called the dealers, but wheelchair providers, I don't like to call them the ATP. And the reason why is because I think that does a disservice to their skill set. Because also, in addition, I've got speech therapy friends, I've got special educator friends that are also certified as an ATP that aren't wheelchair experts. So but in general, so for this conversation, provider, what are some things that you wish you could tell a provider and the clinician, whether it's questions or that they should have asked you or, you know, whatever?
You know, everybody gets a file. You know, whenever you are going to see a client, you get their file. It tells you what their injury level is, you know, how long they've been disabled or what have you. But put that file down and actually talk to the person for 5 or 10 minutes and find out what motivates that individual, you know, what they're interested in. Are they going to school? Are they working? Are they going to the lake every weekend with their family fishing? Are they going hunting? What motivates that person? And also, what's going to motivate them in a couple of years? You know, you're taking a snapshot of them the day of the evaluation, but where are they going to be 6 months from now, a year from now? Is this equipment that you're recommending going to be adequate for the next 6 years? You know, we have power chairs for a long time. What's anticipated? What's coming? So I would say get to know the individual and also ask questions if you're not sure. You know, as the provider, don't be afraid to ask somebody a question. How do you do this? You know, are you interested in that? You know, get to know them a little bit, put the file down. We're not all numbers on a chart, you know. You talk to four different quadriplegics, the same level, and we all have different abilities and different skill sets. So get to know the person as well as you can and find out what their interests are personally.
Mike, what about you? What you do know, you wish people knew more?
Greg, you know, me and him have been doing this so long, it seems like two heads saying the same thing sometimes, but I'm with Greg. A lot of times when I'm talking to clinicians, I do a thing with our nonprofit. We bring in PT and OT students. We spend about an hour with them, showing them about what we can do, what we can't do, what we'd like to see better. And I always lead with start paying attention to the person that's in the chair and not the chair. My chair is just an accoutrement. It's how I get from A to B. But at the same token, I'm like, Greg, if we hunt, there's bells and whistles on these chairs that click and pop, and we try to mask those in outdoor settings. And if you knew that going into it, you may be able to steer them towards a better piece of device. But at the same token, it's always about knowing the person that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. Greg hit the nail on the head. You could have 100 guys in the room. All of them are going to be different because our personalities are completely different. Not to mention what nerves are affected during the traumatic injury. You know, you got a whole ton of things that go into it. And far too often, you know, I'm not really a labelist kind of guy, but we see a lot more of like ableistic mentality kick in where you got a lot of able-bodied guys saying, that's the chair you need. You have to be in that chair. And I'm like, but that chair does not fit my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And so get to know your people. And if you do that, I think it'll make your life a lot better. Plus, it opens up an awesome opportunity for empathetic dialogue. You start seeing the person in the seat for a person, not just a chair.
Absolutely. No, hands down. I used to tell people when I would do, I spent 10 years of my career doing clinical education, and I would tell therapists, I'm like, you know what? I know it's time consuming, but I know that therapists are on a tight, tight schedule. And so are our providers, but just taking that time to put down the chart, to not, you know, look away from your laptop, don't sit there, you know, and also I would always ask people to quantify. And what I mean by that is sometimes people would say, well, I'm super outdoorsy, so I need the mountain bike tires. And so I you know, and they wanted it on their everyday chair. And there, I do know of one person who uses mountain bike tires as his everyday tires. And it hurts my heart every time I see him pushing on carpet because I'm like, oh, Lord have mercy. There you are. But the thing is that is, you know, he's like, this is where I'm out, you know, I'm out and about and outdoorsy more often. But I would often ask people, please quantify. And I'll tell people that, how many hours a week are you doing that? Because when people ask me, you know, what do you like to do in your spare time? Well, I like to play pickleball. Well, how often do I get out to do pickleball? Depends on the time of year, honestly. So let's not, you know, it's like, but if it's a huge part of your life and you're, and you know, I was recently at an event out in Colorado, and I was chatting with one of the providers that works for one of our national providers. And he's like, you know, I've got this client who he needs more outdoorsy options on his manual chair because he decided to move off grid and he's living in a yurt. Okay, if you live off grid and you live in a yurt, you absolutely need some outdoor adaptations for your chair.
Yes, ma'am.
You hit the nail on the head earlier too. I live in a pretty big city, and we've had guys that 5 years into it end up homeless for whatever reason. Now you've got a quadriplegic that is trying to go into different facilities. Nobody plans that, right? Mm-hmm. But now he's got to try to find a way to take care of his chair and for his chair to still get him from A to B. And we just never know what a lot in life's going to be, but we try to plan ahead and what's going to be the best piece of equipment. But
absolutely. Well, when I introduced this podcast, I was talking about how it is fall. I know you guys are East Coasters at heart. So you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those leaves changing, and it's just like, it like pulls you outdoors, right? Like it's just one of those things. I can remember vividly when I was a child, Uncle Ed would rarely show up to our Thanksgiving gathering because Uncle Ed was always hunting. So where I'm from in Virginia, hunting is a big thing. But then also my nephew, he shoots clays. So he's a sportsman. I will never forget. I've shot shotguns, shot rifles, shot bows and stuff in my life. And I've never been a hunter, but I have an older brother who our middle sister wouldn't do the stuff. So pretty much as the youngest, I was forced. There was no choice. But I remember I was shooting one of Nathan's rifles and I was like, ah, and because it just the recoil on thing, man alive. I can't even imagine, you know, what sort of adaptations that you would need for that. So I guess trying to where we can start with this, because I think it's cool not just talk about the hunting, but like, let's talk about the wheelchair base. What are some things when it comes to wheelchair base that if you think of somebody's going in the great outdoors, what would you recommend for them?
You want to start? Fire away, brother.
Sure. Well, my everyday chair is a Permobil F5, and mm-hmm. You know, I have the tilt, recline, seat elevator, the whole works, the complex rehab seating. And you would be surprised how often adjusting my tilt, also going up, using the seat elevator to get into a ground blind and raise my crossbow up to the window. So the seating base, I like a front wheel drive chair, but I definitely, being a quadriplegic, I need the complex seating for every day. And then we also work with a company in Indiana, Be Adaptive Equipment. I shouldn't say we work with them, but they've provided a lot of equipment for me and for Mike over the years. And we use a lot of their equipment, but we also kind of make our own mounts as well. So we have tailor-made this equipment. But getting back to your original question, a base, tilt, recline, seat elevator, for me, that's a must.
Me and Greg both use track chairs. And on every one of my wheelchairs, I'm just going to be honest, and I'm throwing myself out there. I'm a first-time Permobil user, so the chair I'm in now is a Permobil. Yeah, I know. Welcome. Everybody keeps saying that. But the reason why I came is they said longevity. The chairs just last. So we're going to give this one a whirl. I'm not overly abusive because I still go out and do a lot of speaking engagements. So my chairs, again, part of me, it can't look like I just got out of a mud hole. It's got to look nice. If I put on a suit and my chair looks like trash, my therapist at Shepherd said, you know, that it's a sore thumb, man. You've got to keep that chair going. But like Greg said, I use a rifle rest to help with my trunk balance. And so each one of my chairs, I actually build a device that allows me to, within seconds, slide that rifle rest into every one of my chairs. And so they go from track chair to my everyday chair, whatever, if I just want to get outside and shoot. Again, it comes down to personal preference. Greg said we tailor make these things. And it comes down to what is exactly your limitations? What do you want to do? And how independent do you want to be? And when I get in the woods, I want to hunt alone. I like that. I like being completely independent. As a quad, I can't sweat and I freeze to death. It's a running joke in my house. Me and my wife have a good marriage until hunting season comes. And then she knows I'm going to be up every morning at 3 a.m. I don't like being cold, but if it's 10 degrees and raining, I'm still going to the hunting blind. And so she said, you won't go get groceries if it's 50 degrees. What's going on? I said, that's just who I am. I'm how I'm built.
Greg, you mentioned the track chair, or Mike, I don't remember which one of y'all. The track chair, we've seen, pun intended, more traction with that chair a lot. I've got some friends that use them. Some of them are veterans. I think I've got one friend who is an influencer for them. So he just recently got one delivered. But for the everyday person, is something like a track chair that's more of an outdoors chair, is that attainable? Do they have the ability? Because I want to say there are a few states that have been implementing them in their parks and recs program, right?
Yes, absolutely. Georgia is a big proponent in the state parks. Is it Amy Copeland Foundation? I think they put 12 or 13 chairs at least into their state parks this year. And Mike and I throw out, you know, track chair is kind of a generic term. There's all kinds of different manufacturers of them. One of our friends, Cordell, he has the Echo Rover, right, Mike?
Yeah.
And, you know, all of these chairs have benefits, pluses and minuses. Mm-hmm. I would say the biggest deterrent for people buying their own is the price. You know, you throw in the rehab seating, you're looking at $19,000, $20,000 easily. And not everyone can afford that individually. A lot of our friends do fundraising to get that outdoor chair. They are amazing. They go anywhere. And I love my chair. It gets me out hunting. But I also try to use my everyday chair whenever I can, so that I don't have to put in an additional transfer on my wife, that she doesn't have to take me out of my everyday chair. If I can get out at the farm and hunt out of my permobil, I do that too. But funding needs to be expanded for the outdoor recreational chairs, because we got a lot of young guys, a lot of young women that want to get out, that want to do things, and they simply can't afford it.
Uh-huh. You know, to tie in on what Greg was saying, I got my first one in 2014 from a military grant, and Action Track Chair was phenomenal. It was the first time I could independently get on the beach, hold my wife's hand, and we could roll where we wanted to roll, how we wanted to roll, as fast as I wanted to go. So it opens up a lot of doors. I tell a lot of senators and congressmen when we're talking to them, my everyday chair is my tennis shoes. It's my work shoes. Mm-hmm. My track chair is my work boots. It's going to get me places that I've yet to find a place they will not go. Now, the hindsight to that is you got a 350-pound chair, 300-pound chair, that you have to find a way to charge somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You'll get 5 or 6 miles out of a good charge on the chair, depending on terrain, but then you got to charge it. Plus, you know, some of them are too wide to fit in hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. They open a lot of doors, but they do come with responsibilities. I'm blessed in the South. We have, Greg just mentioned Georgia. We got a bunch of chairs there. One of our newer guys, a guy named Jacob, he runs a company here, a nonprofit called Waymaker in South Carolina. He's got 20 plus track chairs now, and they'll bring them to you anywhere on the Eastern coast from the bottom of North Carolina down towards Florida for free. Nice. You just have to get on a waiting list. We see the openings, but like Greg said, that the prices is something that we need to figure out if there's going to be more grants. You have to weigh your options. It's a big expense, but it's also a lot of luxury.
It is. One of the things I used to tell parents, because I worked in pediatrics, as I mentioned, and a lot of times folks would have these big pieces of equipment, not even CRT, but big things that they wanted. And I think back, so I don't think I've disclosed this with you guys, or our listeners, though. I have a cousin that has cerebral palsy. Susan is in her 50s now. She's, I think, 56. And I remember when I was little, and this was back in the 80s. So, of course, asking questions of people were intrusive, even though it was my aunt, my mom wouldn't ask. But I was always fascinated because mom would get Susan the same darn things for Christmas every year. And I remember thinking to myself, Mom, have you ever asked on Bonnie, is there something that Susan needs that you could do? Now we've got all these great, like, you know, GoFundMes, those sorts of things. But, you know, I would say, especially when it comes to gift giving time, is don't be afraid to ask folks to contribute towards a larger gift for you. Hey, I'm saving for this. My sister's the queen of that. You know, she's like, we're saving for this for our kids. You know, what do you want for Christmas this year? We want money towards our Disney trip. Okay, great. And I think that's another option that people maybe don't think about all the time. Instead, people are like, well, I just, you know, you end up with a new shirt, you end up with a new sweater or what have you. But are there other organizations out there when it comes to funding for recreational activities? I feel like I see some, but I don't know how easy it is to get those. What are y'all's opinions on some of those?
Sometimes they're hit or miss. You know, you try not to step on toes. I see it from the veteran side. Sometimes they are only seeking guys that have combat-related injuries. So even though you have a guy that served honorably, they don't qualify for some of those grants. We see it in the sporting world with some of the tennis chairs, hand cycles, all those. There's a lot of them out there, but they're only open once a year to grants and so you have to apply with everybody and hope you get in. There are some out there. I run a little small nonprofit in South Carolina. We have multiple track chairs and we have frisbee golf and some other things on the property. So it's about introducing them to the chairs, but we can't afford to provide one for all of them. So it comes back to what we're doing now is just building rapport, opening up ideas that more and more needs need to be out there. But the biggest kicker, again, not the soapbox, but is to look at what your nonprofits are providing. A lot of these guys and girls are putting it all out there. Like I said, Jacob and them, not just to toot their own horn, they're getting the chairs out for free. And so you know where your money's going. Guys in Georgia are doing the same.
And with different sports, there's different organizations that will fund different types of equipment. I don't know that there's a lot of hunting organizations other than small grassroots organizations around the country that get together and fund a chair or fund a hunt, things like that. There's plenty of those. But I believe it's the Kelly Bush Foundation. Maine, she was injured downhill skiing. And I know they do a lot of grants for other types of wheelchairs that are, you know, for racing and things of that nature. So depending on your sport, you can search by state or search nationally to get some grants.
Mm-hmm. Right. Getting outdoors, I think, is key. For years, we've talked about, when it comes to the, I call the F word of our industry's funding. Anytime I teach, and that's another thing, as before we even dive into funding, I think it's important that we talk about is, I think it's important during the evaluation process to talk about funding, but for therapists, I encourage you not to limit that to what topics you bring up to the clients you're working with. Fully disclose that, hey, this might not be funded, but I think it's important that you have the opportunity to see this, because I think all too often people will, you know, get caught up in the fact that, oh, it's not going to be funded. But I guess, what are y'all's thoughts are, and are you seeing changes? Because we know for years, Medicare has said in the home.
Mike, you want to jump in, or you want me to kind of jump in a little bit?
Go ahead, Greg, because I'm trying to keep it PC.
But... Well, you know, we don't live just inside our homes. And I think Medicare is finally coming around to the complex seating that we do need to prevent pressure wounds and to allow us to be as independent as we can, even with caregiving. You know, having a seat elevator that I can go up and get to my sink and brush my teeth and turn lights on and other things, I mean, that's essential to well-being. Having the right cushion, all these things contribute to my better health. So I think as we advocate and we talk to our state senators and in our legislation, I think some of them get it after many, many years and many, many voices banding together to kind of plead our case. Funding's always going to be an issue. But as you said earlier, too, we as individuals, if we want something, we have to save for it. You know, Mike and I, we get a lot of comments that, oh, it must be nice to have an action, you know, track chair. And we kind of reply, well, what are you doing to obtain that goal? You know, are you putting $25 a month away? Are you putting $100 a month away? What are you doing as an individual to get to your goal? So we hate to tell people that, but it's easy to say, yeah, it must be nice, but what are you doing? Are you fundraising in your community? Are you talking to the local sportsmen's clubs? Are you putting money away? Are you taking out a loan? Like Pennsylvania has an assistive tech program that they will give you a 10-year loan on equipment. Mm-hmm. And it's 3% interest, I believe. You know, you spread that out over the course of 10 years, a track chair is obtainable. But it's what are you doing as an individual to always be bettering your situation? That's my soapbox, Mike.
Man, you hit it, dude. Look. Life is not easy. You add a traumatic injury to it, it's going to compound it. That's a given. But at the same token, we live our best life. I don't like using those terms, but we have to put forth sacrifice in order to do it. Life, there's nothing free. A free meal is going to come back to bite you in the hiney at some point. So what we need to do is focus on what our lifestyle is about, what we see that we want to achieve over time, and then we sacrifice for it. Greg and I are both kind of oddities. We both have gone to grad school. We had to sacrifice for those because after you achieve a certain degree, there's no more scholarships. I'm a Marine, but I'm an old guy. So we had the Montgomery GI Bill. You had to use it in a certain time frame. I got hurt when that was going on. So I lost years that you can't still use the money. So it's gone. You know, that's not a knock on anything, but you go with what you're qualified for and then you make sacrifices for it. That's just part of life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that is something that we think about when we're saving to get other things. We have this is probably one of the funniest stories with my nieces. I'll try to make it as short as possible. But I remember one year at Christmas, we're out to lunch with my family. My mom whispers to me, is your sister having some financial difficulties? And I was like, and my sister's known as like the miser in our family. Like, she's so cheap. So I told her, I was like, you're a dying millionaire. But anyway, and I was like, I don't think so. Long story short, her six-year-old daughter had talked to my father, and my father said, what do you want for Christmas this year? And Ella said, well, we really want to go to Disney, but right now we have to save for mommy's car. And so I looked at my mother and I was like, okay, time out. You and dad think Beth has no money because you listened to what a six-year-old said? I was like, have you bothered to talk to talk to the rest of our family to find, you know, talk to Betsy and ask her about it. And the thing was, is because my sister has a very set way when they, you know, I admire this about her. When the girls would sell any of their toys, like she would allow them to get the money and ask them, which of the funds do you want to put this money towards? And so teaching them at a young age, really to save for things. And, you know, she definitely is the person who, she buys a car that they save for it completely. And I think that we were taught that as kids. And I try to talk with folks about that too. That can happen when it comes to CRT also. And some of the stuff is not going to be medically necessary, but there's plenty of things that I do that aren't medically necessary either. But I also, you know, my insurance doesn't cover, but I know for my mental health or for my physical well-being, I need to set aside that money. So you're right. It's an uncomfortable subject. And I think that sometimes people get a little bit squirmy about talking about it, but I think it's important. And Greg, I think probably your rehab counseling background makes it so you feel a little bit more passionate about telling folks about that.
Well, I really do. And I understand that some people don't have the funds or the means or the education or the background, somebody in their life telling them, hey, you need to save for these things. That might be the very first time somebody is hearing that. But if you're not trying yourself to help yourself, then how can you expect others to give it to you or to fund this activity? The other thing is, as you mentioned, Angie, is how do you know you're going to use this chair very often? Is this a once a year type thing that you could find an organization that would let you use that chair for a day? Are you trying to get out every weekend with this chair? Is it, you know, cost benefit kind of thing? You're putting out $19,000. Are you going to use this once a year? That's a big expense. So sometimes the conversations are hard, but they need to occur.
Yeah. And I like that we're talking about this on this podcast. I think therapists, you know, need to hear this and not be afraid. As you were mentioning before, it's important to get to know the people. No, we're not saying y'all that y'all need to ask them to open up their budget and go through everything, but talk about different funding options with them. If we know that, you know, if someone comes to you and they're extremely passionate about hunting, for example, present different ideas, encourage them to look up different grants. Don't squelch that and say, oh, it's not going to be, you know, your insurance isn't going to pay for that. Because there are different ways for people. You know, you never know where people can get, you know, their finances and, you know, figure out how to get that money to make it happen. So I think that's the, one of the big messages I think of this podcast is making sure if someone has a passion to be outdoors and engaging, then how can we fuel that with different resources and allow them to get out there? Because there is just something different about being out in nature and there's just something therapeutic about it. And as you were mentioning, Mike, you know, you like to go out alone. I'm sure that's probably something you do for your mental health, just a time for you to get out there 100% by yourself.
You know, it's sometimes scary for your spouse, sometimes scary for you if you're going out for the first time. But at the same token, I like to get out and challenge myself a little bit. There's times that's got me in trouble. I know me and Greg have had laughs about it where I'll call my wife and say, hey, when you get home from work, don't get wigged out. I'm down in the bottom of the field, kind of stuck in a briar patch. You know, but we say it jokingly, but at the same token, just because we're broken vessels, that doesn't mean our lives stop. And so we have to find those passions and those things we're willing to sacrifice for. And if we want leather seats in our car and it doesn't come equipped with that, we have to make sacrifices. And that's a hill I want to die on. I want leather seats. Okay, you got to pay for the upgrade. Sometimes it's that way with chairs, even though we have Medicaid, Medicare, Husky, all these different things. It's a tough conversation. Me and Greg get it a lot with the track chairs. But like Greg said, I can't justify to my guys on the nonprofit buying an extra track chair if it's not going to be in motion all the time. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of expense. And I can't do that to our donors. And so it comes down to what's going to be the best for your life. And that's where the wheelchair nerd comes into me is how do we get more people outdoors? We have to open up those ideas and think outside the box. The outdoors are never going to be accessible. Not going to happen.
It's true. That is very true.
Find the equipment that will let us get out to chase our passions safely.
And one of the big things that Mike always says is, you know, don't be afraid to fail, you know, to get out there. If it doesn't work, you know, at least you tried, try a different way. Don't be afraid to get out there and think that you can't do it. Learn from the people that have a little bit of experience. Talk to everybody you know and their brother. They may have a different idea than what Mike and I say. You know, how Mike does things is a little bit different than how I do them, but you get ideas and just never be afraid to fail. That's the big thing.
Absolutely. I think my other piece of advice is also never be afraid to connect with other people. Never be afraid to build those relationships, to build that rapport. I mean, you guys may have heard us, who were listening, and we're talking about people. I guarantee you, actually, before, I had never talked to these gentlemen, talked to Greg a first time last week, first time meeting Mike, and we know some of the same people, because having those connections really helps you to build your network and learn, so you're not just stuck in one spot. So I love it.
Making those connections and building relationships, the disability community is a very small community. I mean, and we have to advocate together, or changes are not going to be made. When we're talking to these lawmakers, they don't know what they don't know until we come and have an empathetic dialogue and say, you'll never understand paralysis, but sit in this chair for a minute and I'll show you how I get around a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's not a sympathetic thing. We want them to see life through our eyes. They just don't get it. Before I got injured, I was ignorant to people in chairs. I just thought they couldn't move around. That was my ignorance. And so it took a hard knock on my head from a diving incident to really change my mindset. And I'm thankful for it.
Makes sense. Well, I want to make sure this podcast doesn't go super, super long, because I know folks are probably like, y'all talked about all sorts of different things. And we did. I think when I wanted to bring these two guys on here, y'all, I wanted to inspire you to help your clients you work with, if you are an end user, if you're a parent, because I know we have some parents who listen to all the sorts of different episodes of the podcast, but to inspire y'all to get out to the great outdoors. If you don't know who your therapeutic recreation group is, spoiler alert, every city actually has them tied to. There's adaptive recreation that is required as a part of the NRPA and National, I should know this, Recreation Parks and Rec Association. Those undergrad memories are back in the early 2000s. But anyway, there are different programs for you to get involved in. I highly encourage folks to get out and explore the great outdoors. Greg and Mike, thank y'all so much for being on here. I'm sure this will be the last time we talk to y'all, and hopefully we can connect again soon.
Thank you so much, Andrew. We really appreciate everything you're doing, and would be happy to come back anytime.
Thanks a lot for having us. You know, and me and Greg always say, life goes on, just keep pushing.
Thank you for listening to Wheelchair Nerds, presented by Permobil. Today's episode was brought to you by...
The Permobil Corpus Seating System is designed to help you effortlessly achieve your optimal position with the assistance of technology. With up to 45 degrees of active reach, forward tilt capability of up to 14 inches of active height seat elevation, active reach and active height work harmoniously together to bring your world within reach. The seating system is constructed with quality from the ground up to ensure that you can easily find your perfect position to tackle any task at hand. Permobil Corpus Seating System is available on the F3, F5, F5VS, M3, M5, and MVS.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast, too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobil.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you.